All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good afternoon and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, CW2 type helicopter pilot, Vietnam, 1969. Many, many years ago, it seems like. I want to start off the program today by thanking everybody that's associated with the Vietnam Veterans of America, Charlie Kettle's chapter 310. They just recently completed their fundraising pig roast down at their land down on South Wagner Road, and I want to congratulate Don and the rest of his crew for putting on a great program before the monsoons hit. The turnout was excellent, and I hope everybody enjoyed the barbecue beef, or the barbecue pork, excuse me. They've been cooking a pig all night, and a lot of people showed up, and I want to say hi to everybody who stopped by the Huey that we have down there. I got to talk to a lot of listeners and hopefully gathered up some new listeners, so thanks very much again to the members of VVA 310. Great job, gentlemen and ladies, especially the ladies, the VVA auxiliary, I guess you put it that way. I don't want to leave them out of the story. Well, for all of you that don't know, Veterans Radio is sponsored by Legal Help for Veterans, which is a veterans disability law firm in Michigan, and they only handle veterans disability claims, and I think you want to give them a call if you have some questions. As you know, here on Veterans Radio, on the last Sunday of every month, we only talk benefits. We want to try and answer your questions so you can start filing them in. I realize it's 3 weeks away, but you never know. So you can go to veteransradio.net. That's our website. Click on Contact Us. Leave some information there, and we'll get back to you, or we'll talk about whatever your issue or claim issue may be on our program on that last Sunday of September. So we want to make sure that you remember that. That's Legal Help for Veterans. Their phone number is 800-693-4800. And the other sponsor that we have that we're so grateful for is American House. And American House and senior living communities are all over Michigan. But the ones that we like the best, I guess you could say, the one we're going to be talking about today is the American House in Sterling Heights. And this is we're going to be having a guest on just shortly to talk about an event that is coming up this week because it's Patriots Week. But the one in Sterling Heights at 11255 15 Mile Road in Sterling Heights, Michigan. This is the one that we're going to be at next Saturday. So it's going to be a fun week, and it's going to be an interesting week. So check out American House. Great people, great leadership there, and we're anxious to talk with them. Two other things that are coming up, though, that I do want to mention is our good friends at the Firing Line Gun Range in Westland is sponsoring their fifth annual Firing Line Barbecue. And this barbecue is designed to raise money for veterans, especially for the Fallen and Wounded Soldiers Fund of Michigan. And what the Fallen and Wounded Soldiers Fund does, it provides money and access to benefits, access to rehabilitation and job training and so forth, and also money if you run in, you know, if you find yourself in such a situation that you can't pay your bills. You get a hold of the Fallen and Wounded Soldiers Fund, and they can help you out. And also to benefit the Veterans Memorial Garden of Westland. So make sure that you get out there. If you have any questions, you can contact Don Hay, the co-owner of the Firing Line, at 734-326-7320. Or you can email him at D, his last name is H-A-I-G-H, at firinglineguns.com. That's next Sunday, September 16th. They are located at 33,000 Ford Road in Westland, Michigan. This is a great fundraiser. As I said, this is his fifth annual Firing Line Barbecue. He's got all kinds of auctions and silent auctions. There are going to be gun raffles, all sorts of things that you guys and men and women are going to be interested in. So we want to make sure that you get out to the Firing Line. These are great supporters of veterans, and we need to support them just as well. So next Sunday, the 16th of September, from 1 to 4. So 1 to 4. So check them out. And finally, the other one that I wanted to mention is the 9th Annual Veterans Health Summit. And this is going to be on Thursday, September 20th from 9 to 1 p.m. And this is going to be at the Visitech Building at Schoolcraft College in Livonia, Michigan. It's on Haggerty Road and between 6 and 7 Mile. You can see it from the 275 Expressway. But the Veterans Summit, as I mentioned, this is going to be the 9th annual one, and this is sponsored by Legal Help for Veterans. Give them another plug right there. Legal Help for Veterans is sponsoring this, and it's going to bring together experts. Topics that this year are going to include the VA Medical Center here in Ann Arbor, their update, State Veterans Update, Veterans Home for Southeast Michigan. If you didn't know that, the VA is contemplating building a veterans home in Southeast Michigan, which is awesome. Maximizing veterans' health care, health and medical cannabis is also going to be discussed, and disability benefits are updated. There will be specialists there and county counselors to answer your questions. You must register for this event, so I need to give you a phone number to call, and that is 248-912-3223. That's 248-912-3223. Again, this is on Thursday, September 20th. It runs from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Vistatech building on the Schoolcraft College campus. More information about it you can find at their website, which is 2018vetssummit.eventbrite.com. That's 2018vetssummit.eventbrite.com. And you can find out more information there, or you can go to our website. We'll have some information on it for you to click on so you can register online. But you got to get that to them as soon as you can so they can anticipate how many people are going to be there, so on and so forth. So let's see. I got to go back to my notes here. Number one, all right. Joining me on the line right now, as I wanted to talk about Patriot Week, and my guest, I could say right now, is Judge Michael Warren. And Judge Warren, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you so very much. I'm really pleased to be on.
Well, thank you for agreeing to be on the program, and tell me all about this Patriots Week that's coming up here soon.
So Patriot Week begins on September 11th and ends on September 17th. The 17th is the anniversary of the signing of the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And every day we celebrate a founding first principle from our Declaration of Independence, like unalienable rights, limited government, the social compact, the rule of law. Key documents and speeches that embody that, like the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the I Have a Dream speech. Key historical figures that patriots and others who made that come alive in America, founding fathers like Jefferson and Madison, Washington, you can't get better than a military veteran in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And then flags from our history. For example, the Don't Tread on Me flag, which has a very proud history from the Marines and the Navy. Also, the flag that flew over Fort Sumter. The suffragettes had a flag. And on each day, we celebrate those things. And it's very grassroots. We have a number of events, not just in Michigan, but across the country. We've been officially recognized in over 10 states. Many schools, Rotary clubs, and Kiwanis's have been involved, and we've had a number of events that have highlighted the sacrifices of our veterans, and to show gratitude and respect for all that they have done, all the sacrifices they've given.
Well, and I'm just looking at your website here. It's patriotweek.org, folks. Just go to patriotweek.org and click on events, and there's all the things that Judge Warren is talking about are listed there, including Patriot Week at Comerica Park tomorrow night. Right? Yeah, tomorrow night at the game. They've got, as you mentioned, Frederick Douglass, and his importance today is going to be at the Bloomfield Hill Senior Center. Wow, Older Persons Commission event, Renewal of America. Oh, you guys got a cool things going on here.
We try our best. That's
I know,
right.
I can see that. On September 11th, you've got the Fallen Heroes Memorial Ceremony.
Yeah.
Let's see, you've got Lake Orion Veterans Memorial, again, a 9/11 commemoration. Frederick Douglass, you're going to be talking about him. And where is that? University of Detroit Mercy? No, where is that going to be held?
That's the professor and from UDM, and that will be at the Senior Center, Bloomfield Senior Center.
Okay. And then you've got Constitution Day. We can talk about the Constitution. And then finally, you don't end the week, but you've got your 9th annual Patriot Festival coming up next Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m., and that is going to be at American House in Sterling Heights, correct?
Right, yes. And that's going to be a fabulous event. First off, if you like food and barbecue, that's the place to be because it's free lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Gillette and his crew, who are true American patriots, are sponsoring this event and organizing it. I'll be there. The co-founder of Patriot Week, Leah, my daughter, who started it when she pounded on the table as a 10-year-old and demanded a new celebration for America. She will be a speaker, and she is by far the best speaker. really, really powerful. And there'll be some other dignitaries there, and a bounce house for the kids, and a patriotic program. So it's right up the alley of your listeners, for certain.
All right. Well, I know they enjoy going out for barbecue, because we had a full house this afternoon. So all you got to do is hop in the car and go up to Sterling Heights, and you get more of the same. And again, you're going to be running into some great people, veterans and non-veterans, but everybody is an American out there, and everybody's a patriot. And I think it does wonders for your psyche when you see all these men and women out there celebrating the Patriot Festival. I want to thank you very much, Judge, for being on the program, and I hope to see you out there.
Well, thank you so much for all that you do and everything that veterans have done. And God bless you, God bless America, and God bless our sacred, those who have given up their lives in the sacred honor of duty, and those who have protected the country as veterans.
Right, and God bless those that are still serving.
Absolutely.
All right, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right, we've got another group that we're going to be talking about. They don't necessarily have a festival or anything coming up, but I'll bet you didn't know that there's a Medal of Honor Grove just outside Philadelphia in Pennsylvania. So you got to stick around for that. We'll be right back after this short message. You're listening to Veterans Radio. And we are back on Veterans Radio, and we are welcoming to our program right now the chairman of the Friends of the Medal of Honor Grove Board of Directors, Mark Prowell. Mark, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you very much. And here with Deb Wolfson, the curator of the Grove, as well.
That's right. She was next on my introduction. So, Deb Wolfson, welcome to Veterans Radio as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you both for agreeing to be with me. Let's talk about the Grove. Let's go with Mark first. Can you tell me about what the Grove is like? And I have not been there. I am very negligent because I drove by there a couple of times.
You have? Well, this is Deb. Let me give you a little bit of the history of the Grove.
Okie dokie. Okay?
Of course, we know the Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in action against an enemy force. Which is bestowed upon an individual serving in the armed forces. To date, there are 3,503 recipients since it was started in the Civil War. 72 are still living. There were 19 double awards given. So the Medal of Honor is on the campus of the Freedoms Foundation at Valley Forge. They own the Grove, and the Friends of the Medal of Honor Grove is the organization that maintains it. So the Grove is the oldest living memorial to all recipients of our nation's highest decoration. There are 50 states. Each recipient is accredited to a state,
mm-hmm.
and that means where they entered service. So each state is recognized, and the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico. There's also a chaplain's memorial that honors the nine chaplains that received the Medal of Honor. And there's a very special one, the Ancient Order of Hibernians, which honors 160 immigrants who received the Medal of Honor, but because they weren't citizens of the United States, could not be accredited to any state. So in the Grove, which is about 42 acres, each area has a brick plaza, and there's a 7-foot, 7-inch obelisk modeled after the Washington Memorial on a brick plaza. Each obelisk bears the state seal and the names of the Medal of Honor recipient accredited to that state. Then there are ground plaques also on that area that also honor the recipients from that state. There's about 4 miles of roadway. It's a wonderful place to walk around and just reflect on what was, we know that freedom isn't free, and when you get there, you really get that. The Grove was dedicated, the land, in 1964, but the first four states were dedicated in 1968. General Eisenhower was one of the architects of the Medal of Honor Grove. His helipad is still there.
Oh, all right. It's I'm looking at the website. The website that for all of you to go and look at this. It's friendsofmohgrove.org. And there is a picture. Well, it's taken approximately this time of year, it looks like. There's beautiful colors behind it with the obelisks and the monuments that are set up there. So all of the Medal of Honor recipients have their own state plaque, but they also have a plaque that is put in the ground?
Yes, their names are all listed on a plaque or engraved.
Mm-hmm.
There are 18 obelisks that are still made of fiberglass, which was the original obelisk installed. Over the years, organizations have rededicated stone obelisks. So in New York, you'll see all of the New York. There's 696 recipients honored in New York. That's the highest state that has the recipients.
Mm-hmm.
So their names will be on the obelisk, and then there will be a ground plaque also along the sidewalk or along a, or by a tree of that same state area.
Okay, because we have our own Medal of Honor. We do a lot of Medal of Honor things here on Veterans Radio. In fact, each week we try to play a different Medal of Honor recipient. We kind of read their citation and for everyone. And we have one locally. His name is Charles Kettles. He was a helicopter pilot in Vietnam, received his medal 2 years ago now, a little bit late, but he got it. And so we always talk about Chuck or Charles Kettle, Colonel Kettles now, as a one of our local hometown heroes.
And he is honored in Michigan. We put him in last year,
mm-hmm.
and we've sent him a picture of his area, so he's aware of us as well.
Well, let's talk about where is this located, because we do have a national and international audience, and people might be driving past Valley Forge here on the Pennsylvania Turnpike, right?
Right, and we are right. We're right adjacent to the Valley Forge Park.
Okay.
People often mistake us for the park, but we're right next to it on the campus of the Freedoms Foundation. And if you go into enter the Freedoms Foundation, go straight, and you'll see a gatehouse that says the Medal of Honor Grove. We're open from dawn till dusk, and you're welcome to bring your pet as long as it's leashed. And we get a lot of visitors, especially at this time of year.
I would think so. Mark, I want to come back to you. How did you get involved in this?
Well, Dale, funny enough, I grew up in the area, and I was a Marine. I have a long history of military, the whole way back to George Washington time, and I never knew about the Medal of Honor Grove, and I think it's one of the unintended, best-kept secrets of the Philadelphia area, unfortunately, and our group is really focused on changing that and increasing the awareness. So thank you very much for this opportunity to tell everybody. One of the board members of the Friends of the Medal of Honor Grove, which is a separate nonprofit, separate from the Freedoms Foundation, that was created about 8 or 9 years ago by Deb, Wally Nunn, and a few other volunteers who've just developed a passion for the Grove, and they approached the Freedoms Foundation and said, hey, we will form a nonprofit just made up of citizens, and we'll take responsibility for maintaining the Grove and for enhancing it. And just through a friend who was on the board who knew my wife, said, hey, your husband was a Marine. We're looking for other people. Do you think he'd want to come over? And to my surprise, I didn't even know it was there. But I'll tell you, and Deb explained the layout of it. If you walk through, everybody likes a walk in the woods. And, you know, you walk through there, and there's over 60 monuments. There's over 3,500 ground plaques. There's a QR code that Deb organized where you can, you know, it makes the Grove come alive. You can read the stories like you were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And my 13-year-old granddaughter and I go out there quite a bit. She helps, cut trees and pick up sticks and everything else. And at Deb's encouragement, who I think knows all 3,500 histories, to go over to Vermont and have her Google Willie Johnston. And Willie Johnston was 11 years old when he received, well, 13 when he received it, 11 when he earned the Medal of Honor in the Civil War. And to sit there and have her read his story at 11 when she's 13 and have the opportunity to explain patriotism in that term as to this little kid who wouldn't put down his drum because he was giving signals to his fellow troops as to which way to move, fighting for his country, I think it makes it come alive. And I get emotional talking about it. I just love the place. And anybody who comes in there and goes for a walk and understands how to engage with the grove and read the stories, it is an emotional, patriotic experience. And we just love it. And like I said, our goal is to really enhance it and to increase the awareness to make it a destination. The friends, with help of the Medal of Honor Foundation, nice financial contributions, but everybody else is, like every other nonprofit, we're raising money every way we can.
Sure.
They've paved 4 miles of walkways through the grove. We are in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, so we've been hit by some of the ash borer problems and wiped out a lot of the trees. We spent tens of thousands of dollars maintaining the safety of the grove and the walkways. And on top of the 8 or so volunteers who are on the board of the Friends, Deb organizes about 700 volunteers to come through every year and help us with, you know, we all know how hard it is to maintain our backyard.
Yes.
maintaining 42 acres is a never-ending project. So it's a group effort. And to me, it's special. You know, a former president who was the architect of it, it's maintained just by citizens. So it's a way to keep a legacy alive, and like I said, it's a patriotic experience. It's really a special place. We're pursuing arboretum accreditation. We're working again with volunteer foresters and horticulturists to develop a 10-year plan as to how do we increase the plantings, keeping the native species there, and fighting back the invasives, which is, we all know, fighting back dandelions, but fighting back yeah. briars and everything else. You need an army to do it. You need funds to do it. We're committed to do it and really make it make it as beautiful as it should be to pay honor to the people who are represented there, who in turn, you know, again, once you experience it, pay honor to the millions of Americans who have served and continue to serve. So I'll go on and talk to you all night about it, so I guess I should just pause here right now. But if I may take that back, I guess, for 1 second, for those who aren't in Pennsylvania, certainly whenever you are, please come by. But as Deb said, there's all the states are represented.
Mm-hmm.
And the original monuments were fiberglass. And we're down to, I think, 18 now that are still fiberglass. Over the years, different people from different states will say, hey, I want to take charge of... you know, Vermont, and replace that, and they'll raise funds. We'll work with them, and we'll be the point person here, but they'll raise the funds, and we'll coordinate it and replace these plazas and monuments with beautiful granite monuments. Woody Williams spearheaded one for West Virginia 2 years ago. Oklahoma was just replaced last year with a beautiful rose monument, spectacular. We did a corporate reach-out program, which we're developing, and Goya Foods, largest Hispanic-owned mm-hmm. business, food business in the country, stepped up, and they're a major sponsor for the Puerto Rico enhancement, so we're changing that, and that's going to be rededicated next Memorial Day. So we have a list of states here, Alaska, Arizona, Arkansas, Hawaii, Idaho, Indiana, Kentucky, Louisiana, Maine, Mississippi, Montana, Nebraska, Nevada, New Hampshire, New Mexico, North Carolina, South Dakota, and Washington that still need to be enhanced. So if anybody out there, you know, wants a project and wants to have some fun, I guarantee you'll love doing it, and we put on a great celebration when it's dedicated. And anyhow, that's now I will go back and promise to be quiet for a second.
Okay, that's perfectly fine. We are talking with Mike Prowl, who's the chairman of the board of directors for the Friends of the Medal of Honor Grove, and of course we are talking with Deb Wilson. Woolson, W-O-O-L-S-O-N, who is kind of the founder of the whole thing. And Deb, I'm going to give you the last couple of minutes. This is the Friends of the Medal of Honor Grove. So if I wanted to donate something, how do I go about doing that?
Well, you can go to our website, friendsmohgrove.org. Go to the donate page, and you'll find you can do it electronically, or you can send us a check. And I wanted to say I'm one of the people in the very beginning, but if it wasn't for the thousands of people over all these years who have come and picked up a branch and raked some leaves, we sure wouldn't have it where it is today. The other important thing is that 2 years ago, the grove is is now covered under a conservation easement, which means it can never be developed, it can never be sold. So what we have is a jewel that we need to keep it polished. We need to find people to follow us. We're not going to be there forever.
Yeah, I know what you mean about getting people to follow you with one of your, you know, passions and causes. And so we want to encourage people that next time you drive east on the Pennsylvania Turnpike, get off at Valley Forge, spin on over to the Medal of Honor Grove and check it out, because it looks like it's really exciting. They have Boy Scouts that are working there. They have everybody that's working there. And it looks like a great organization to support and a great opportunity to honor these men and soon to be women at some point. I know there's one Medal of Honor woman, but to honor these men who gave, you know, really went above and beyond. So I want to thank you both very much for being on Veterans Radio.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
All right. We will be there. Next time I get out to Philadelphia, I'm going to go there. And
you better let me know.
I will do that. It's always nice to get a guided tour. We'll be back. We'll be back after the news with our guest, Joe Campolo, Jr., who's written a trilogy about called the Kansas City NCO. Three families, three wars. It's a great story. Stick around on the other side of the news. You're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be back shortly. Back on Veterans Radio, and we're going up country today with our guest on the program is Joe Campolo, Jr. He's the award-winning author of the Kansas NCO. It's a trilogy of stories, actually, and I'm going to welcome him right now. Joe, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you very much, Dale. Very happy to be here.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. Let's talk a little bit about your background in the service, and then we'll get into your trilogy here. So how'd you get involved in the military?
Well, of course, it was... When I went in, it was 1968, and as everyone knows, that was a very busy time in our history, and things were going on, and I was, you know, I was goofing around. I was in college, but I really wasn't doing anything, and I thought, you know, why shouldn't I get involved in something important like the military? And my friend, I had a friend that is already in the Air Force, and he said, why don't you join the Air Force? You learn a trade, a career, and I joined, and the rest is history.
As they say. And so how long were you in the Air Force?
I was in 4 years. 1968, and discharged in June of 1972.
I bet you know the exact date.
You know, actually, Dale, I do not. because I did get out perhaps 2 weeks early, but I don't exactly remember. But I could look at my DD-214 for sure.
That's true. It'll show you down there. It's like mine says I was in the service for 3 years, 7 months, and 2 days. But who counted, right?
Yeah, that's right. Who counted?
Well, I want to welcome you to the program, Joe. And I know that you came to Veterans Radio through the Military Writers Society. And I want to thank you for helping that organization, because they do a wonderful job with helping authors get their books out and helping you get your stories out, don't they?
Yes, they do. That's how actually my first book became about. I had joined the Military Writers Society of America, or I contacted them through one of its members who was kind enough to give me some guidance regarding my my efforts to get published, and they in turn connected me with the Red Engine Press, who works very closely and very much involved with the Military Writers Society of America. And both organizations were just wonderful to work with. They gave me so much guidance and assistance and made my dream of publishing this book come true.
Well, it really is a most interesting trilogy, although you kind of wrote it backwards, but it's
yeah.
Okay. So let's start off with the first one, and that was the Kansas City Kansas NCO, right?
That's right.
So tell me about this story. This is a fictionalized story. I want to tell our listeners this is a fictionalized story, but I got a feeling there's a lot of truth to it.
Yes, there is, Dale, and I know everyone that I have spoke with that was in Vietnam, of course, can quickly relate or can quickly recite a black market story of their own. And that's what the Kansas NCO is about. It's about a black market operation during the Vietnam War, and it quickly escalates from, you know, the everyday mundane things of card scams to a major blown-up drug operation.
Mm-hmm.
And the model for the Kansas NCO was actually a fellow that I came in contact with when I shortly after I arrived in Vietnam. I was working in at night in this warehouse. I actually started out my career in Vietnam and with working with the civil engineers. I wanted to learn a trade, but that didn't work out, so they put me back in supply, boarding supply, so I spent most of my time humping boxes, and occasionally we'd go out on the road, and I spent a couple of months in the air moving cargo around in the Central Highlands, but after I was there about just a couple of weeks, I noticed this fellow that we kept delivering products to in the middle of the night. And, you know, what's going on with this? And sometimes he would be in the company of other senior NCOs. Sometimes he would be in the company of very highly placed officers. And there was never any paperwork involved in any of these transactions. And so, you know, I soon learned that this fellow was the man. He was the guy. And he had a lot of little operations going on there, and most of them were very, you know, I don't want to say harmless, but
they supplied a lot of things that you couldn't get access to for some reason. I mean, we would go through flight clubs, it seemed like every week, and we couldn't get them from the Army, so we had to get them from the Air Force.
Right, right. Well, you know, I'm sure many of your listeners remember the old Sergeant Bilko television show. With Phil, starring Phil Silvers.
Yep.
And I always liken this fellow to Sergeant Bilko on steroids.
All right.
And he was the guy who could get it. So, and he was a very interesting guy. He was actually a very nice person. And in my book, I relate to some of the good things he did. He delivered foodstuffs to some of the villagers in the area and, I know there was no money exchange in those operations because I was involved in a few. And he was actually, and it's probably wrong perhaps to call him benevolent, but he wasn't actually a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And when I talked to people about this, everybody was very interested in this fellow. And when I had wrote a book way back in the 1990s, about my service and my service in Vietnam, and I was trying to get it published. The one character, I was unsuccessful in that effort, but almost, but the one character that everybody was interested in was this fellow, the Kansas NCO.
Hmm.
So I said, you know what, why don't I write a book about him?
Right, they always tell you to write about what you know.
Yeah, right. So. And, you know, during my research and such, and speaking with other veterans, I tied in many of the other operations that actually went on during that time.
So is it loosely based on fact or?
It's loosely based on fact. The story is based upon events that actually occurred during the Vietnam War. The the money transactions, the manipulation, currency manipulation, mm-hmm. which occurred. And that was actually a very significant effort by black marketeers. And what a lot of people don't know is that there was a major currency manipulation. The biggest one in Vietnam was actually managed by a person from India.
Really?
And he had this huge hierarchy of people that worked for him. And, you know, of course, everything goes up. So everything that went up from, you know, the privates and the airmen and the sailors and the Marine, everybody from all that pushed up through the sergeants, and that eventually this was the man. This was, I guess, the godfather, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And the estimates that he made several $100 million himself.
Wow.
And,
just to explain to our audience, I don't know if this is how it worked, but the currency that we used while we were in country were called MPCs, military pay certificates, and it was like monopoly money.
Right.
And
right.
But I think it was about every 3 months they changed the money dramatically. I mean, the color of it and the face of it, and you had to turn in all your MPCs, and then they would give you new ones.
Well, right. If you did not, you'd get burned.
Right. And
you get stuck with them. And the reason they came up with those MPCs was an effort to stop that huge currency manipulation scam that mm-hmm. was going on, that where people were working the piastre against the dollar. And that's when they said, okay, we're going to use this MPC. And unfortunately, it didn't work, because you could still purchase, if you had greenbacks, no matter what, you could purchase anything with greenbacks. And a lot of people over there had greenbacks for one way or another, for one reason or another. So they would take these greenbacks and buy either piastres or MPC, in which the U.S. government would convert either into greenbacks.
Right.
And, of course, the value being, you know, 1.25 to 1 or 1 1/3, whatever it happened to be at the time, the person involved in this little operation will walk away with, as high as 30% to 40% profit.
Holy moly. Well,
yeah.
We got to get back to the books. I mean, I'd love to talk about that for the whole time, because I find that fascinating. The book that just came out, your most recent one, is The Three Wars, which is kind of a retrospect of how all of these young men got involved in these things. So let's talk about the three families that you followed in all three books. Could you do that for us, please?
Sure. And, well, as you said, Three Wars is actually what they call a prequel.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes place before the main story began. And in my first book, there was three main characters who were our heroes, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, our protagonists.
And they were
right?
The Cuccinellis, mm-hmm. Montrell, and Redmond. And so in The Three Wars, I took the ancestors of those fellows, the Cruccinellis, the Montrell, and Redmond, in the first two books, you can basically kind of get an idea as to their family life, family history, ancestry. But in Three Wars, the ancestors are the stars.
Right.
We start back in World War. We go all the way back to World War II,
mm-hmm.
and we work from their ancestors in World War II on into the Korean War, and then into the post-war years.
Right. Yeah. Because you start chapter one starts with the Normandy, and
yes,
then you go from there. And actually, some of these, the way you've set it up, is that some of them actually run into each other, kind of in and out of each book.
Yes, they're actually, they're kind of, when you relearn, like for the gentleman who, Colonel Montrell, the B-29 pilot,
mm-hmm.
of course, he's able to land his B-29 on the runways, newly developed runways by the Seabees in Saipan, because the Cruccinelli, or not, excuse me, Cruccinelli, but because Redmond and his peers were busy fighting and chasing the Japanese off of the island.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all interrelated somewhat, yes.
I found that part of the story really fascinating, and I'm not supposed to say fascinating, but I found it very fascinating and most interesting, let's put it that way, and most compelling when it comes to connecting the three books, because you go from this to the Kansas NCO, and these guys, the sons of these three characters, are all involved with the Kansas NCO, and they end up actually being targeted by someone, because it's, instead of it going from equipment and so forth, a rogue person got in to start and selling drugs and so forth.
Right, right. And unfortunately, that person that ultimately, and I don't want to give the book away.
No, I don't want to do that either. It's hard.
You haven't read it, but there was a person that a rogue person that was dealing heavily dealing in drug and exporting drugs and weaponry out of Vietnam, and he did eventually get caught.
Mm-hmm.
But he was the character that talk calls around. So unfortunately, he had a bad ending, but where that story
The mysterious part of that is that you don't know who it is until the very end. So you did a really great job of building up, you know, who is this bad guy? Because you think that it's the Kansas NCO initially,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
But it turns out to be an unknown character. So we won't,
yes,
go,
yes,
won't go into
it
that.
It's kind of a foil there at the end, and a stinger, if you will.
That's true. So these are our three protagonists and heroes who got dragged into this whole thing, this black market stuff, though it did eventually get out of the service and came home, and this is where your next story takes off.
Yes, they get back to the States, and of course, as many of us who are aware, and unfortunately our reception was not always a happy one.
No.
And we were not always welcome, and so there's some bitterness there. The fellows get back, and there's some bitterness. I don't want to say unemployable, but they're not the number one draft pick, so to speak.
Right. There wasn't a lot of work available for them.
No, no. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people just didn't want them. And and so that's where these three fellows come up with a way to handle it themselves.
Mm-hmm. They're entrepreneurs.
Yes, they did, and unfortunately, their little operation got them into some hot water, quite a bit of hot water.
Right. They were being very creative, and they offended some powers that be that they thought they were impeding on their territory, and so it kind of went from there.
They tangled with the wrong people,
mm-hmm.
And they almost... They almost came to their own demise as a result of that, but fortunately, and as the writer, I can say that they did a good job in extricating themselves
mm-hmm.
from it.
Well, it's interesting. I'm really interested in the characters and how you develop the characters. So you have the whole, quote, Redmond. Let's talk about Redmond, because he's a Native American.
Yes. Redmond is actually based upon character of one of my personal friends who passed away in 2016, and mm-hmm. that man's name was Jim Northrop, and many people may actually know Jim. Jim Northrop was a Native American from the Ojibwa tribe in northern mm-hmm. Minnesota.
Okay.
He became a U.S. Marine, went to Vietnam, served with distinction, came back, and when he came back, of course, he bumped into a lot of problems that we all saw, and some of, you know, based upon his particular circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
But Jim was a writer, and Jim
okay.
started writing about his experience, and he's a very eloquent writer, and he was also a poet and a speaker. And Jim and I met some years ago at a veterans event, and he was kind, you know, and we were both, you know, he was kind enough to give me some tips on the story I was writing at the time, and we became friends and we corresponded, and I love, you know, we were Facebook friends, of course, and he was always involved with veterans organizations and other activities of his Native American tribe, and he unfortunately he passed away in 2016. But he's a very memorable character. Everybody who knew Jim Northrop was a very fond of him, and I encourage anybody to look up some of his writings.
Yeah, I was going to do that. We're talking with Joe Campolo Jr. here. He's the award-winning author of the Kansas NCO and his prequel to the whole sequence of stories. It's a trilogy, is entitled Three Wars, and he's just kind of pulls everything together with this particular book. But in the first edition, these three characters are in Vietnam and they're involved in the black market trade, and they come home and things don't go quite as well, and they end up getting themselves in difficulty with professional, I guess you could say, dealers, and then how they solve that problem. And then we go back to World War II and we meet up with their grandparents and their parents, their grandfathers and their dads, and so it makes for a very interesting story, I am sure. So how's been the response to this?
Oh, the response has been very, very, very well. And people, one of the things that people are saying about Three Wars is, man, there must have been a lot of research involved. And there was, because the first two books, I really didn't deal with the specifics of the tangibles, the weaponry, that type of hard data too much. Mm-hmm. But in Three Wars, I had to do a lot of research because there's a lot of discussion about weapon systems, about particular operations, about particular MOSs, and so I had to do a lot of research for Three Wars, and I found it was very enjoyable.
I would think so, and because so many of us of our generation, and I think Joe and I are probably pretty close, it sounds like, as far as age is concerned, you know, is that our parents were involved with World War II. Some of our great grandparents were in World War I and are all the way back to the Civil War. And so we were raised with the expectations that we would serve if called.
Yes, that's right, Dale. And my grandfather, he served in actually the Italian Navy in World War I. He tried, he wanted to serve in the American Navy, but, because he wasn't a citizen yet, he was working on it, he couldn't serve. So he went back to his native Italy and served in his old unit in the Italian Navy in World War I.
That's got to be a great story.
Yeah, it's very interesting because he actually served in the Italian-Turkish War in 1912.
Wow.
And then my father was a soldier in the Army in World War II, and he was in the mechanized cavalry. Mm-hmm. And my uncle, John Campolo, he was in the infantry, and unfortunately he was killed in the Battle of the Bulge.
There's so much history that's out there, Joe, and it's our job to continue reporting on it and telling these stories.
Yes, I love, whenever I have a book signing, I meet all kinds of people, and a lot of people are veterans, also, because obviously a lot of my book signings are at veterans venues, and I just hear so many wonderful stories and exciting stories, and I think that's really the best part of being an author like this, is people share these stories with me, and it's so enjoyable, and they trust me with their stories, and I've heard so many of them, and unfortunately, as all we all know, that many of our World War II vets are gone now,
right?
But fortunately, a lot of their stories are here because people people wrote about them, mm-hmm. or they wrote about them.
Yep, it's really important. So I want to remind our audience here, this is Joe Campolo, Jr. He's the award-winning author of the Kansas NCO. His newest book is Three Wars. It's a trilogy. You can find it on Amazon. I encourage you to go there and check these out. You can get a link off of our website. And, Joe, and thank you so very much for being on Veterans Radio. It's a great story, and I encourage people to check you out.
Thank you very much, Dale. It's been an honor to be on Veterans Radio and to talk with you today. And thank you to everybody who listens and supports Veterans Radio. And thank you to all my readers.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We're going to thank, of course, the Military Writers Society, and we're going to thank the Red Engine Press. We've got to talk to them. Next week, join us here live in the studio. We're going to be talking with three local veterans because we are in the Washtenaw County. We're putting together a book of our own about some of the local Washtenaw County veterans from the Vietnam War. So tune in. We're going to have books. We're going to have dog handlers. We got a CB. We got military. What was his job down in the Delta? Anyway, we're going to be all over the country. So tune in next week on Veterans Radio. And until then, you are dismissed. We'll be right back.